Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 9th of July. Very nice to have you with us, and we're delighted to have you here. Well, Ray and I are.
Yeah. Can one person be a panel?
Yeah, I think. You're it, buddy.
Okay, I'm the panel. I disagree with myself, and I'll tell you why.
I'm sure it's not the first time.
No way.
We were just talking. We're waiting for our other two panelists, both Ira Fussfeld and Rosemary Romeo, who are removing headphones as we speak.
Oh, they'll be here soon.
They'll be here in
just
moments. Oh,
that's terrific.
But Ray and I were talking later on in our 10 o'clock hour. We're going to be talking to a gentleman who is a sports writer for The Washington Post, who's written a book called The Grind, Inside Baseball's Endless Season.
Yeah.
And his the idea of this book is 162 games. It's the sport's longest season, and it's grueling, thrilling, routine, lonely, exhilarating, and I was telling Ray that I was excited that I thought the book was really interesting, and your comment, Ray, was...
Wah, stop complaining. You're a baseball player. You make millions of dollars a year to play a kid's game for 6 months of the year, train for four. I'll take it. I'll take it.
And there, but the premise of the book is that it affects the municipalities, it affects the families of the players, it affects the travel, it affects the you know.
Wow. Quit complaining.
Well, you know. All right.
Hey, Rosemary's here.
Yeah, Rosemary's
here. Hi, boys.
Here. Oh, look, Ira's here.
And we have a panel. This is very great. Yeah, we're going to get them all suited up, put on their microphones. we'll have a quick fitting during the break. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get into our into the full swing of things here. A baseball.
Ah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have to put on some eye black.
We'll be right back.
Support comes from Voice Theater in Woodstock, New York, presenting Our Country's Good through July 26th at the air-conditioned Birdcliff Theater. VoiceTheatre.org. Anise and Associates, helping businesses, agencies, schools, and hospitals in the Capital Region understand and move to the cloud, providing a cloud readiness assessment at anese.com/Albany. Joyelle's Jewelers, Delmar, New York, celebrating 25 years, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, remounts, silver jewelry, engagement rings, alternative metal wedding rings, and more. JoyellesJewelers.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Good morning, and again, welcome back to our roundtable panel. Everyone is seated and ready, so let us begin. First, with introductions, WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Hi, kids.
always wonderful to have you here, sir. University at Albany journalism professor. I had to go through. I have templates, and I had to go through like, all these templates
and mark them
and
all
change,
differently.
Yes.
You can't say SUNY Albany anymore.
Well, right. according to the entity that Rosemary works for, I got a cease and desist letter in my introduction of stop calling it SUNY Albany.
That's ridiculous.
Maybe you could say
right?
The university formerly known as SUNY Albany. Do it like Prince.
That is so
then,
ridiculous.
Now, what,
SUNY.
Well, the Ulster County Community College became SUNY Ulster, and they implored us to use SUNY Ulster, and we said, no, most people know it as Ulster County Community College. So that's interesting. They've changed again.
Well, and then I've noticed that Brian was doing a story. Brian Shields was doing Northeast Report yesterday, I believe, and referred to it as UAlbany. And I was wondering, well, I wonder if he's going to get a letter,
that.
Too.
So there's a little identity crisis going on.
Yes, but anyway.
Wow.
When I was matriculating, it was Albany State or Newport State. Could be painful when I was matriculating.
Yeah. Did you shave your palms?
As I said,
you know what?
It hurts when I matriculate
okay.
this way.
Then don't do that.
He's been matriculating since he was 11.
All right.
So University at Albany. We'll stick with that. Rosemary Armeo. Good morning. How are you? And Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld.
Hello.
As well. Wonderful to have you all
Thank
here.
You.
In the same room talking about these topics, we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Rosemary and I were walking in this morning, and we said, it just seems like everything today, we need to be economists.
Yeah.
It's true. You know,
I groaned when I saw the list.
Yeah. There's a lot going on. But real quick, you have the situation in Greece, which we've been talking about. All week, last week too, we've been talking about, we're going to talk about the China markets, which we alluded to yesterday and mentioned briefly, but didn't get into a large conversation about the China markets, even though there are some gains today in China. And then, for goodness sakes, there was the New York Stock Exchange shutdown yesterday for several hours. And which brings up the questions about how much of technical infrastructure do we have in place? And then you look at just that idea total, where yesterday you had outages at the same time, the New York Stock Exchange, United Airlines, Wall Street Journal, and bringing up the idea of vulnerable digital vulnerabilities. So... A lot going on.
We talked about how it appears to be completely technical at this point, yet how do we really know that, and what about in the future? Could hacking have done something like this and shut down basically the economic infrastructure of the largest country in the world?
I just couldn't believe, and I don't know enough about it, and they probably wouldn't tell us if we asked, but I don't understand how an entity like the New York Stock Exchange or United Airlines, which is so reliant
also
on computers, how could they not have several or more redundancies?
Backups.
How could that not – something clicked off, let's go to the second one or the third one. I mean, we're not talking about a small business that can't afford these kinds of redundancies. You can't bring the stock market and an entire airline to a screeching halt. And by the way, I got a kick out of there was a report about United Airlines saying the customers, they would be the usual transfer fee for changing tickets would be waived.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And then so they could get for nothing. But how many days are they going to have to wait, because all of the planes are filled right now? Anyway, so but that's a secondary. Well, that's not secondary. Again, it's the upheaval that it creates. Now, if they have these redundancies and it still went down, then you got me. But.
Well, I just want to add, I think you're absolutely right. What happened to going back to the old days? I mean, we didn't used to have computers, and yet you could make reservations or buy stock. Why can't we just go back to, you know, the old technology?
They don't have any ticker tape machines anymore over the stock exchange. But the nice stocks continued to trade, just not at the New York Stock Exchange. It was not a market killer.
Right.
I mean, it was, however... Did they actually say what happened yet?
Yeah, they said that they believe that it's attributed to new software that had been installed that morning, and that they were getting some glitches very early on in the process, and that at some point in time they decided rather than try to fix it on the fly, they just shut it down. So I believe it was a manual. If it was not a manual, they were intending to make it manual, but the software update was the catalyst from what I read or heard last night.
How about the Wall Street Journal? What happened
there? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that is the Wall Street Journal is a Dow Jones company, right?
Yes.
So you have the Dow Jones, that whole...
Wait a minute. The Wall Street Journal is owned by Murdoch now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess there wouldn't be a connection.
Yeah. No.
And United Airlines, how would you have brought that in? Are you seeing some conspiracy here?
No. No, I was seeing a connection between Wall Street Journal and because they were tied into the information from the stock exchange that perhaps that caused.
Well, that's a possibility. They may have a direct link for the purposes of updating their own sites, etc.
Yes.
So a bug might have gotten through.
The systems are just incredibly complicated and vast and unreliable, increasingly unreliable, huh?
Well, in this article that I sent, this is from the Los Angeles Times, the article that I sent to our panelists, is really interesting because it just talks about the overall problem of to think about, I read an editorial about this morning as well. We think about this in the context of just our cell phone. We buy a cell phone, and it has all these bells and whistles. And you say, oh, and you use maybe a quarter of them, right? You don't use, nearly what is on the device. And then when you start playing around, you realize that, yeah, it can do really cool things, but you have to have the system, the mm-hmm. data, the internet and your capability, your Wi-Fi, to be able to do all of that.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you can't, and it doesn't work, and it's not certainly safe to rely on it. And we've kind of gotten in that same way with how we're relying so much on the technology mm-hmm. from the web. This is good news for you newspaper guys.
Well, except we get hit by the same bugs as everybody
You're
else
right.
does.
Well, except that, I mean, it was WallStreetJournal.com that got hit. There was still a Wall Street Journal on the stands.
Our electricity went out in Bosnia one day, and the young reporters, I was the editor, I'm older by several decades, and they go, wow, what did you used to do in the old days? Because you couldn't use the computers, the phones were connected. What did you used to do in the old days?
I'm just going to say, the Wall Street Journal may have gone down, and we can all say, oh, isn't that great for us because they went down, but tomorrow it could be us. So.
Well, no, that's true. And I wasn't great for, you mm-hmm. know, but one of the things that is brought out in this article, which I think is a really interesting point, is Carl Wright, who is a manager of a defense company, said that most companies today spend less than 10% of their information technology budgets on security. And, quote, sometimes it's as low as 6%. Not a lot of money an organization spends on tech to create capability for their business goes to securing it. Hmm. What we need to see is a major shift.
Hmm.
And so you spend all the money on figuring out the cool things that it can do, but you don't spend the money on the security and the capabilities.
Well, one of the things that I saw happen with our company as we got larger was a sort of redundancy in that if the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, were to lose power, or if there was some sort of a computer glitch in our organization, that we could plug into another one of our properties and still publish that way. Now that presumes you've got electricity, but you don't need electricity because you can take your laptop out of the building and we've had occasions where people were literally printing newspapers from their homes because the technology allows you to do that. But again, it's not foolproof. When the hurricane came up the coast several years ago, again, I'm personalizing this because I'm most familiar with it, our paper's primary server is located in New Haven, Connecticut, which, there was where the most threat was. Their building got flooded, and we were racing against the clock to beat their computers going down. And once they're down, we're all out of business. So, but that's why I say it just has to be a lot of redundancies on these big companies.
One of the things that is I want to get back to China for a second. Rosemary, you brought this up yesterday. Talk to us a little bit about what we've seen over the last 24 hours.
I'm not sure what you want me to talk about. We mentioned that this has heated up over some time. The Chinese appear to be at the top of a bubble, or the end of a bubble, I guess you would say. And people in China invest heavily in stocks, not just companies or large buyers, but regular people and companies. And they suddenly have gotten very cold feet. The economy is not great. And so that we saw first a slow, moderate sell-off. People were beginning to say, hey, I better reel this in. And then it started, I guess, the day before yesterday, this massive buyout so that the government is concerned. They could crash. They're worried about crashing into a depression. And so they've shut down the markets and people that, of course, doesn't make you feel better about things. So they're getting more and more panicky.
Well, tell me if you think this is true, because I can't explain the details of what is going on in China other than it has been negative for them. But there is a sense in this country, there has been a sense of this country of nervousness watching China grow as it has and tumbling us back to number two among the world's superpowers. And so that word of this kind of a financial crisis in China might be met here with some sort of jubilation. And I'm wondering whether that's ill-advised, because
the economy
of the world now is all together.
Too interrelated.
And if China hits the skids, it's got to have a negative impact on major companies here who have invested there, and the dominoes will continue to fall.
I read a whole thing about how China has a lot of money invested in the United States. So if they have a sudden need for money, where are they going to get it? They're going to call in loans. Mm-hmm.
They're going to call in loans here.
So we also have a lot of Americans who have invested in China, and that's part of the problem. Not just American investors, but around the whole world, they put money into China. It's this huge new emerging market. A big middle class is coming. It's a great place to invest, or so the thinking has been. And now those investors are all running into trouble, just because the world economy is not in great shape.
Yeah, and our stock market is down about 600 points from a couple of weeks ago, and it was about half of that yesterday. And I'm unclear as to whether that's being attributed to China, to the computer shutdown, or something else.
Well, there's like at least three things that it could have been. And I mean, I don't know that you have to distinguish one over the other, but Greece, China, and economic problems are certainly making people worried.
Yeah, and a lot of us who are retired and watch these things very closely.
Or about want to retire sometime, or the same, feel the same way.
Does a retired person need to take more than $60 out of their ATM?
Not if you have a credit card that is up
good
to
limit.
Date.
Gotcha. Let's take a break. We'll come back and are going to get a news update from the BBC. We will be back, and we have a lot of letters on these and other subjects. We'll talk about many other issues, including the South Carolina, waiting for the South Carolina governor to sign the bill to remove the Confederate flag. We'll get to all of that and much more after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We have other topics to get to, and I will get to those. However, I want to get to our mail too.
Ooh.
And we have mail, we have letters, and I want to read those. So let us begin, shall we? First of all, there is this note from Jack, who writes, why do you need to take so many breaks during the conversation's first hour? You clearly don't need so many breaks in the following 2 hours. What's up? If you need all that break time, can you put some of it into combined breaks? It's really hard to follow the subject in conversation when you have 3 minutes and then a break again and again. What is already less than an hour? So real quick answer to that is that we follow the NPR clock. We have underwriting breaks, and we take those, and there are no more breaks in this hour than there are in the second and third hours, or in the morning edition hours, I would add.
No, these breaks are just more welcome.
That's right.
They're more noticeable.
Yeah,
That's right. And I know while it may not appear to people who are listening on the radio, there's a certain amount of planning that has to go into the break to decide what we're going to do next.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we get to argue. Rosemary and I get to argue.
That's right.
We do.
It's fun.
By the way, Dow Jones just came back in 200 points up at the opening.
Oh, good.
Nice start.
Yes,
231.26. I think I'll be able to buy that extra sandwich
today. There you go. Good job, Ira. We got this from Carol, who says, interestingly, the ex-Greek finance minister theorizes that the imbalance in trade between the USA and Asia since 1971 is a cause to the 2008 crisis, the EU crisis, and the current China crash and Greece meltdown. Why not get an economist to join the roundtable? Well, we have had economists on in the past, and I'm sure we will again.
Good plan.
All right. Then we got this from Steve, who writes, going quite far back, these kinds of breakdowns were common when we reached the deep middle of the hot summer, except they used to be mechanical, not digital. The digital aspect makes it way more widespread than it would have been otherwise. Andrew says it's possible that the Wall Street Journal that went down because of the massive amount of traffic from people trying to get news about what was going on.
That's a good point.
At the New York Stock Exchange. For Rosemary, when United asked the FAA for the ground stop, TSA began only accepting paper boarding passes. If you had an electronic boarding pass, even if you downloaded it the night before, you had to go back and get the airline to give you a paper one, which they couldn't do easily because the computers were down. That's just for you as a little bon mot.
But the planes, even if you had a a boarding pass that they could have used. You couldn't. The planes weren't taking off.
No, no. Well, you could get on. You could get on the stuffy plane and
yeah. No, it's lovely. Squeeze in one of those middle seats.
Right. Yeah. Breathe the recycled air. Mmm. Spring. Also,
I love airplane stories.
Really?
Yeah.
Eric says, love you guys. Solar activity also causes computer glitches.
But I don't think that was the case here. I mean, there was not a major, I don't believe a major solar flare in X1 or otherwise, which would knock out, but it wouldn't just knock out one server. Yeah, you'd see a lot more than that.
I was wondering because I couldn't hear my, I probably shouldn't be saying this on the radio, but I'm going to say it anyway, which was I was trying to listen to XM satellite radio last night and I could not hear it. It
really?
Was going in and out.
Well, maybe there was some solar activity.
So I don't know what was
going on. I once had a student who didn't turn a paper on time and he told me solar activity had knocked out his computer. Hmm. I actually gave him an extension based on the originality of that excuse.
I like that.
We've seen that before, and the issue of hardening the grid is a real issue against both solar flares and electromagnetic
pulse. Does that have anything to do with IRA matriculating?
weapons, which are... Well, I beg your pardon?
Nothing.
You've been talking to that astronomer guy.
No. So you have the solar flares, which can... We've seen them knock out power. But you also have EMP weapons, which do the same thing. So the infrastructure of this country is woefully behind the times as far as hardening it. And so they've been looking at ways, Congress has been looking at ways to harden the infrastructure.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Where do you pull these things out of?
Well, it's
well, I think you know.
Oh, I have, why I ought to.
I thought the solar flares were an act that was coming to the Linden. To the Linden.
Okay. All right. Well, I can see it's on deaf ears, so let's just move on.
All right. We appreciate it, Ray.
Fine.
You know we do. Let's talk
let's
about...
take a break.
No.
No? Okay.
Take everybody off.
Rats.
Let's go to the other big story of today, which is South Carolina. House has approved the bill to remove the Confederate flag. The Confederate battle flag that has flown at the South Carolina State House for more than 50 years will soon be gone after lawmakers capped a tension-filled session early on Thursday and voted to remove it from the grounds of the state capitol. I believe about 1:50 this morning was when the final vote came through. 94-20 was well above the two-thirds majority that was required to move the bill toward the desk of Governor Nikki Haley, who is expected to sign the bill sometime this morning.
Well, I imagine you've been talking a lot about this, and I apologize that I haven't heard the discussion, but I just don't...
It was very insightful.
Well, I mean, can you imagine that it lasted this long and it took this tragedy, you know, these nine murders, to do it, and why wasn't this flag removed right after the Civil War ended? I mean, it's just why has this flag been allowed to fly for so long?
States' rights.
Yeah.
It's part of, you know, part of the heritage of America, too.
Well, it's perfect for a museum.
But
finally will go. Yeah.
It's equally fascinating as to then how quickly it got removed after the tragedy, because of just that idea of you're going to fly the American flag at half staff, you're going to fly the state flag at half staff, and that flag
was right up there, fluttering at the top.
Yeah. And that is what people were
but
questioning.
But how did this flag survive the civil rights era? What was it about this, as horrific an act as this was, these nine murders?
Right.
Couldn't we point to any number of other horrific acts over the last 50 years, if
that,
not
that could have done
farther
it.
Back?
That's a fascinating question. It's like, why didn't the shooting in Connecticut become this sort of symbol for guns? It just didn't take off. Everyone thought it would, but it didn't. And then the shooting in the church in South Carolina really had this cathartic reaction. That's a good question, Ira.
I mean, the only other answer that I would give to my own question is the proliferation of media. I mean, I'm always thinking media. There's just so much, and there was such a bombardment of anger and finger-pointing that the politicians, even in a state as hard-bound as South Carolina, felt that they had no choice. I'd be interested to hear what the 20 people who voted against it have to say. Or maybe I wouldn't be interested in hearing them.
Yeah.
We got this letter from Matt, who says, as someone who has been critical of South Carolina's hypocrisy in the past, the size and quickness of the flag removal vote, focusing on the few legislators, including those who claim heritage, can't name three conservative rights. I'm sorry for That's what my screen now looks like. Look, I'm being hacked. I'm being hacked. Yeah. So I apologize. So I was reading that in the middle and the screen went dead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Sorry, Matt.
I should just make it up then at that point. When we look at the so I assume we'll see the bill signed, and then I think obviously we'll start seeing this in other states as well, correct?
Well, one would hope. They're certainly discussing it, and there are places where they're kicking and screaming. But, you know, the other thing that I found interesting about South Carolina, and you probably have already pointed it out, is that for the reputation of South Carolina, in part because of this flag, is that it's a redneck, old line, Confederate state. Yet the 9 murders did not trigger in that state or in those communities the kind of violence or any violence that other instances around the country that resulted in black people getting killed generated. Now, that may be in first because in these other places there was the sense of police versus blacks. But nevertheless, did we see rioting in South Carolina? What we saw was a remarkable example of people coming together of all colors and leading to this rather tame decision to remove the flag.
You also had our black president down there making a major and moving address, and the input of federal power and majesty, if you will, in the South has always had a remarkable effect. You know, one thing to correct here is that the Confederate flag was not flown over the South during Lincoln's time, the little time he had left after the war, or subsequent administrations. That came out in the 60s. It came out in response to the civil rights movement, and it was a white resistance thing from the beginning. So the flag, those people who argue that it's historical and meaningful and it stands for South right and the Southern tradition, that's not really true. That's what it started out. It was then hijacked, if you will, by racists.
Yeah, so all the more reason why the outcry to bring it down should have occurred many years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
We do have a couple of letters saying that exact same thing. We also got this from Robert, who says, why take it down now? Simple. One of the murdered was a state senator. Several of the legislators who voted to remove it gave that as their reason. Also, the letter I was trying to read before with many of the words missing. I have them all now.
Oh, good.
As someone who has been critical of South Carolina's hypocrisy in the past, I believe credit should be given to the state's elected leaders for the size and quickness of the flag removal vote. Focusing on the few legislators who voice opposition is unproductive and no better than the conservative right's biased view of issues. Yay for WAMC, says Matt. Jorley says, why is the country so obsessed with the Civil War? Most people, including those who claim heritage, can't name 3 battles in that war. And then we got this. It says, it's my understanding that the Confederate was revived and reinstalled. That's, again, back in 1962, going back to that issue.
Yeah, George Wallace had a big thing. He hoisted the Confederate flag to the top of his state house.
And we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
So we call, or what I call, the reading of the letters.
The reading of the letters.
Nice.
It takes on a religious connotation.
Let's move on to other stories. The police chief in Baltimore has been fired.
That's interesting.
The Baltimore Police Commissioner, Anthony Batts, who arrived in the city 3 years ago pledging change but lost the confidence of many in his rank and file in the wake of riots in April, was ousted Wednesday by Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who said he had become a distraction that hindered efforts to fight a recent surge in violent crime. The mayor acted just hours after the police union issued a report critical of the department's response to the unrest set off by the death of Freddie Gray, an unarmed black man who sustained a fatal spinal cord injury while being in response
after he had been arrested.
While in police custody. Ms. Rawlings Blake insisted that she was responding to a crime surge and not acting to placate the union, whose reports of the riots were preventable.
What do we think of the mayor? I mean, going back to the event itself,
yeah,
and through the...
she's the one who had some problems with her response.
Yeah.
You know, I'm usually the first one here, I realize, who calls for off with their head, fire them when a person at the top presides over if is not directly responsible for some sort of fiasco. But in this case, the mayor was so firmly in charge, and I think he really tried to act on her wishes to, like, let these guys demonstrate, let them go. And that's why it got out of hand. And now she's responding to a report that the union wants to blame somebody, and I'm not surprisingly, it's the chief. I think the chief sort of got a bad deal.
Yeah, and the chief was the face of the city's response. Every
Absolutely.
Time they had a press conference, he was the one, and she was behind him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. From the distance of 500 miles or so, I just think that this guy may have gotten a raw deal.
But, I mean, isn't that standard sort of political action if something like this happens? Somebody at the top, someone's head rolls.
Well, yeah, and in business, it would be the person at the top. For crises this significant and what happened in that city, and the commissioner works for the mayor. Why when the mayor was didn't the mayor botch it at least equally?
Well, the governor is certainly ready to get rid of that mayor. He was he made it very clear at the time of
right.
the riots. Like she waited too long in
right.
his
yes.
view to call out the National Guard. He dispatched them within 2 minutes of her final call when it finally came.
Because what was her line that there should be. Didn't she initially
said something
say,
that gave suggest as Rosemary said, give them some room.
Right.
Yeah.
That this was a valid protest was the idea, and so they should be allowed to exercise their constitutional rights. But the union, of course, it's a police union. They're saying this was really
right.
bad
there,
when you have that many people.
Yeah, and if you recall, there were so many aerial videos of that showed them staging, and a lot of the
Getting
critics
ready.
Of the police tactics were making those criticisms based on what they saw on the
right.
things you couldn't see otherwise, the aerial view.
That's right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up and get a few more issues in. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. Cowan's Auctions, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations. George E. Heigel for consultations. 518-369-7994. Turning Stone Resort and Casino, offering racquetball, tennis, and 5 golf courses, including a golf dome. Lessons available. TurningStone.com for details. And Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel.
Hi, everyone.
Ray Graff.
This is public radio.
Yeah, Ray Graff is here. He's done it all.
And, oh, yeah.
I did it
my way.
Rosemary Arbeo is here.
Such
Ira
a boring
Fussfeld,
life.
And I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome you to write to us as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Tony says, we have to face the possibility that the Confederate flag has come down in South Carolina after the murders at the church because it was a symbol without corporate backing. After the killings of children in Connecticut, the NRA was mobilized to protect its real constituency, munitions manufacturers, and of course, the NRA always wins. We also got this from Rachel, who says, or Rochelle, I apologize, in response to the comment that there hasn't been a violent response in the South. What about the 7 churches that have been burned down, which the media are paying attention, well, not paying attention to. There have been eight, but one has been ruled as a true accident.
NPR has been all over this.
How did he find out about it, if not from the media?
Yes, and we have covered it. We covered it on here.
It's been on our web. You can look on our website. If you just search for that, you'll find plenty on that.
Mm-hmm. The Mark says, I believe the Confederate flag should come down, but I don't agree that the Dukes of Hazzard should be taken off of TV. If Archie Bunker can still be on the air, then we should leave the Duke boys alone. That is a, because of the General Lee, there's a Confederate flag on the side of the car.
How do you compare the Dukes of Hazzard to Archie Bunker, which debunked all this?
No, I have a better comparison. Many years ago, it was decided that they would never air again any reruns of Amos and Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very funny program, and it was a product of its time. And much like this program, I think that both of them should still be on here. I mean, you had to look past the—
In museums. They should be in
museums.
Yeah,
well, they are. The Amos and Andy you can get online and at the Paley Museum. But that's an example of a show that was taken off the air for the same kinds of reasons as the Dukes of Hazzard.
Also, Dukes of Hazzard, I mean, not quality.
No.
I wouldn't say it was a successful program, but I can't, it was not up there with the...
No, fast cars and short shorts.
Yeah. It's been an issue. But I think that gets back to your earlier point of, why haven't we been arguing about this three decades ago in the 70s when it was on television? Mm-hmm. All right. So we move on to other issues, and let's end with a Donald Trump story.
Oh,
shall we?
We haven't had enough of him on the media.
Hair-raising.
We haven't done a lot. Oh, that picture.
That was something Alan would say.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
The picture that has been going around on Facebook, though, of him out on the tarmac of the airport with the hair all messed up, like it just sort of exploded, is a great picture. I'm sorry. It's very funny. The head of the Republican National Committee, responding to demands from increasingly worried party leaders, spent nearly an hour Wednesday on the phone with Donald Trump, urging the presidential candidate to tone down his inflammatory comments about immigration that have infuriated a key election constituency. The call from the chairman, described by donors and consultants briefed on the conversation and confirmed by the RNC, underscores the extent to which Trump has gone from an embarrassment to a cause for serious alarm among top Republicans in Washington and nationwide. But there is little they can do about the mogul and reality television star who draws sustenance from controversy and attention. And some fear that, with assistance from Democrats, Trump could become the face of the GOP. Meanwhile, the Donald, as he is often called, has said he has nothing to apologize for.
Rosemary alluded on the Media Project, which we just recorded, to a Frank Bruni column in the Sunday Times, which I thought was a tremendous column, because the prevailing wisdom is that Trump's comments are hurting the GOP in general. Right. And that it could be that the GOP could use this as to its advantage by coming out strongly against Trump and showing on the immigration issues and others that, no, they're not out there like Donald Trump. They could become more mainstream if that's their goal, and may not be. But other than Pataki, who is at the bottom and through a Hail Mary, and Jeb Bush, whose wife is Mexican descent and whose denunciation was not really that vociferous.
He didn't offer it. Bruni makes the point.
He has since.
Yeah, yeah. In response to a direct question about it, the reporter's asking just what you are, like, why aren't you speaking out against this? He finally gave a response.
Well, in this call by the GOP to Trump to talk about this, comes one day after Hillary Clinton said, why is no one in the Republican Party, why are they not talking, are the candidates not speaking out? And
it's true. Rand Paul has talked about, well, he speaks forthrightly, and Christie has backed down against him. So he said Trump is a good friend of mine. Well, what? Why? Why do you do that? What does that say about
Judy Giuliani, who was interviewed the other day, and he said, "Yeah, Trump is a good friend of mine," and I don't think he meant to say it this way. He was trying to navigate the slalom of saying I don't agree with him. He ought to shut up, but he tried to do it politely, in a way that Trump wouldn't come back and say Giuliani is an idiot. Which is the other thing, Trump hits back everybody just instinctively. George Will writes a negative column about him. That guy's an idiot. Krautheimer is an idiot. Yeah. These are people who would presumably be allies of whomever is going to be nominated by the Republicans.
Meanwhile, the polls show that he is doing pretty well and holding his own. And don't you think that is also what's fueling this great concern within the party?
Well, we also we're redoing the media project.
Really,
the polls at this time and at this point in the cycle of an election is so meaningless. I think people are endlessly entertained by Donald Trump. I click on his stories to read what ridiculous, outrageous thing he said. Now, this is not the same as supporting him for the presidency. So that's one thing. I do trust that the American people eventually will get serious when it's time to get serious about a presidential election, and they're not going to vote for him. In the meantime, it's kind of good for laughs.
But here's what I'm afraid of. What? If you make a mockery of the system, a system that already has serious flaws— Isn't it completely possible for that to happen? Meaning, like a Jesse Ventura kind of thing.
Well, wait a minute. You know, the guy has been a very successful businessman, and for years I've heard it said, "Why are we letting politicians run the country? Why don't we put somebody in charge who's made a payroll and the like?" It wouldn't be this guy, as far as I'm concerned.
That's my point.
But nevertheless,
well, Steve Forbes ran, Ross Perot ran,
right?
Mitt Romney ran.
Yeah.
So, several times.
And Trump will flame out. I mean, it just seems clear he's going to flame out. If the Republicans' base somehow winds his way into a nomination, can he win a general election in this country?
I don't know. That's a question I'm asking. I I'm just wondering.
I don't think he can win the nomination. No. I just don't think that happens.
But even the people he's appealing to, conservatives, have reason to doubt Donald Trump. He was a Democrat. Did everybody forget this? He was mostly a Democrat until recently. He does not stand for a whole lot of the issues that conservative Americans do.
And he contradicts himself. He called Hillary Clinton the worst Secretary of State in the history of the country. While he was she was Secretary of State, he had praise for her from time to time. Mm-hmm. So it's just right now it's entertainment. It's the middle of the summer. We're a long way away from the election. And I think we'll all be watching that first debate just for the entertainment value of it.
Absolutely.
I would rather read a Donald Trump story than say, a Ted Cruz story, wouldn't you?
Well, Ted Cruz is scary. Donald Trump is humorous right now.
Yeah.
We're going to end there. And my thanks to our entire panel this morning. Raymond and Rosemary, you'll be back tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Darn.
We'll see you then. And Ira, always good to have you here.
Thank you. I'll be back at some point. I have to refresh myself.
All right.
I'm going to matriculate back here.
Matriculate back.
Oh, boy.
Come on back. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.